Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to a Score North podcast right now, and if you're a business owner, so are your customers. In fact, I could be talking about your business right now, telling the tens of thousands of loyal fans about you and sending them to your business. Find out how you can partner with your favorite Score North podcast. Visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner. Fill out the form, and we'll get in touch with you quickly. Once Phil, Judd, Declan, or others start talking about your company, you'll be amazed at how many fans start showing up. So visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner.
Purple Daily is daily Vikings entertainment. We just want the Vikings to win a Super Bowl before we die.
I will ride with this group.
Seriously, man. Please.
And away we go.
And away we do go. Purple Access. Judd Zolgad, Tyler Fornes of the Sporting News, of course, his YouTube channel, Vikings First and Skull, of Vikings Draft Party fame, the man that broke it all down, and Ross Brendel. This episode, by the way, we'd like to thank our sponsors from Ugly Deck, because you know what springtime means, folks. Springtime means deck time, and a new deck from uglydeck.com is just what you need, install or DIY. Uglydeck.com offering up to $1,000 off for a limited time. With install, you're going to get the best carpenters. With DIY, you're going to get the best coaches to help you from start to finish. Ugly Deck is on a simple mission, and that is to rid the world of ugly decks. UglyDeck.com, setting up appointments now at their Shakopee Deck Design Showroom. Check out UglyDeck.com. That is UglyDeck.com. All right, gentlemen, plenty to discuss. Yes, the draft is over. Schedule release coming up. And rosters sort of set, but not completely set. So, Forno, I'd like to start you off with this question, because I saw that you wrote about this for the Sporting News. And that is the last bastion of free agents left, who the Vikings, now that the draft is done, now that their needs are pretty clear, more so probably just short term for 2024. But who do you see as being left out there? I don't know, defensive tackles, perhaps, starting with that. Who could be free agents that they could sign who would fit in and help them in the coming season?
So when you look at the free agent pool, it's obviously very thin because most free agents have already signed, and the guys that you're going to be targeting are going to have a flaw of some sort, whether it be age, tread on the tires, or injuries. And in some cases, it's all of the above. So you have to kind of pick and choose. And plus, some of these guys have been used to making a lot of money, and that money might not be there because of where we're at currently in free agency. So then they have to decide, like Dalton Risner did last year. Well, do I want to take a lesser deal, or do I want to hold out for the money I'm actually worth? And it could come back to help him, and it could come back to bite him in the butt later. So we have to kind of look at all of those factors. But I identified five guys that I think would really work, and I think you might be able to get on a little bit of a discount. And the first guy is Odell Beckham Jr. He sat out all of 2022 with a torn ACL that he suffered in the Super Bowl. And then he came back with the Baltimore Ravens and was okay. Nothing great. 35 catches, 565 yards, 3 touchdowns. He is not the Odell Beckham Jr. that was his dominant force that the Cleveland Browns paid a lot to go and trade for, that they hoped was going to elevate Baker Mayfield into the superstar quarterback. It just never happened. And Odell keeps getting hurt. And I think if you get him on a value contract, don't ask him to do a whole lot as like your wide receiver three, I think he could be a really big benefit for the Minnesota Vikings offense. Plus, there's the LSU connection with him and Justin Jefferson. I don't know how tight-knit their relationship is, but I do know that a lot of the LSU guys do have good relationships and they stay connected off the field. So that could end up being a really big factor. Plus, he doesn't have to learn the offense. He already played for Kevin O'Connell at one point. So there's going to be a lot of continuity there. Another guy is Tyler Boyd, who played in a different variation of what the Kevin O'Connell offense is under Zach Taylor. He's been around, it feels like, for 45 years, but he was only drafted in 2016. And he's going to be much more of a slot guy. But with a lot of these tight, condensed sets that the Vikings like to run, that's more than fine. And as a third option, like, this is a guy that can do a lot of the little things for you. He can do it a lot of the nitty gritty dirty work. And I think that's really important. I identified just one offensive lineman. That was Connor Williams from Miami. A little bit of a connection with Brian Flores. They did cross paths in 2021, I believe, when they signed Connor Williams. He's coming off a torn ACL, so he may miss a little bit of time. But he's a guy that can come in and compete for the left guard job, potentially kick over to center if you see some struggles with Garrett Bradbury at any point during the season. Blake Brandel, I think, is a capable enough guy, but he doesn't excite you as a starter, but you're like, okay, he's solid, and you're not going to feel bad about it either. Two defensive linemen for, as we kind of wrap up, Calais Campbell and Emmanuel Ogba. Campbell's almost 38 years old, but he's got incredible length for a defensive end, and I think having that presence could really help some of the young guys, and I really would like him to work with Jonathan Grenard to continue to learn how to use that length and dominate, because Grenard has like very similar arm length to Calais Campbell. They're different players, but when you have this type of scheme and he's going to be asked to kick inside on occasion, play a five technique, utilize that arm length, that could be, that is one of his best traits, could help elevate him to another level. And Ogba has the same arm length too, but he's 31, 32 years old. And once Flores left, his playing time went significantly down. So I don't know if Ogba is washed, but I think there's still some talent left, and he did have 9 sacks in back-to-back years under Brian Flores. Could be a nice value depth signing for the Vikings.
From that list, Forno, who specifically can help the development of J.J. McCarthy the most in year one? Who's a guy that the Vikings could look at that list and say, he can help us develop our franchise quarterback? He can help protect the investment. Who is that?
So this, I'm going to kind of go off the wall on this one. I think Calais Campbell. I know he plays defense, but he's been a leader everywhere he goes. And when you have a great leader in your building, that is somebody that you want to pair with a young quarterback, because they can help you understand a lot of nuance, a lot of camaraderie, a lot of leadership qualities. And because Campbell plays defense, help communicate with the other side of the football and help understand what they're going through, what they need to do. And helping understand defense is one of the best ways to learn offense, because it can help you evolve your intelligence, evolve your knowledge base. And is Odell or Boyd going to be able to elevate the offense enough to really make a massive difference on McCarthy? Maybe, but probably not. It just evolves like the baseline performance of what that spot is. I don't think it's going to elevate you to an elite level. But Campbell's been lauded as a great leader everywhere he's been. And I think having another person like that in the building can only help McCarthy's development as a person, which is going to be extremely important when you talk about how well he plays quarterback.
So when it comes to OBJ or Boyd, where do they rank right now currently when we compare it to the potential of Brandon Powell being wide receiver 3? Because I know that they both dropped off some. They certainly are names, especially Beckham, that would excite the fan base. But like, how do you look at how that stacks up compared to present day Brandon Powell?
I think they're significantly better than what Brandon Powell is right now, because they're much more well-rounded players and they're bigger, and they're going to be able to do a lot more of the nitty gritty work. When you talk about running 11 personnel and running the football, because with 11 personnel, you need to be able to run the ball. One of the reasons why the Rams are so successful for so long is you had Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, both guys who were a little bit thicker framed, who were very good and very willing blockers. That was able to help elevate that offense to another level. Addison Jefferson, great effort. Both of them are rather slim. They're slender guys. Having somebody who's a little bit bigger framed, especially like Boyd, could help make a big difference in those aspects.
All right, Subject two, sporting news, I think your most recent piece, or one of them, because you write continuously. Mm-hmm. You won't stop. It's incredible. I don't know how you do it. You were, I would call it objective analysis on draft night, when you basically mm-hmm. said, Dallas Turner, I like him, but you had some concerns. You have, I don't want to imply it's a complete pivot, but it sounds like, or it looks like from your piece of sporting news, you went back and watched film and said, oh, I sort of see the fit now with Flores. Take us through mm-hmm. your thought process and take us through where you stand right now when it comes to Dallas Turner being a guy that the Vikings paid a pretty good price for to trade up from 23 to 17 to give Flores another threat as an edge rusher.
So it's a very interesting conversation when you're talking about Dallas Turner. When I evaluate draft prospects, I don't evaluate specifically for the Minnesota Vikings. Now, I might end up shifting that process moving forward, but I'm trying to look at what the player is in a vacuum. And then once I have those grades, then when I'm trying to think of like, okay, who should I send in mock drafts? How will the fit work there
sure.
versus just that overall grade in a vacuum? So I graded Dallas Turner as a high second round grade because there was just a lack of polish and a lack of consistency with some of those flashes. And I highlighted that in the piece. And one of the big things for me was inconsistent. And he got absolutely stonewalled by Texas. So mm-hmm. looking at all of those factors, and one of the interesting things about Texas, Kelvin Banks Jr., the left tackle, could go top five next year. So something to be weary of when he faces elite competition, shows some struggles, which is, you know, not the end of the world, but it's something you want to write down and you want to monitor. And with Turner, I saw a lot of the flashes and I went back and watched different games than I watched with his initial evaluation because I didn't want to see the same plays and potentially come to the same conclusion. I wanted to see different tape. I wanted to see what he was doing in those different games. So I watched Tennessee and Auburn, which are two relatively good football teams in the course of the SEC season. And Tennessee played them really well. It was only a 4-point game and Auburn almost beat them too. So I thought, okay, let's take a look. And I saw it more from a Vikings lens, which I think helped me come to a little bit of a different conclusion. I wanted to see what Brian Flores would like and why Brian Flores would prioritize a player like this, why the Vikings would prioritize him. And I think I understand their thought process now. And I completely concede that, you know what? I just might be wrong about Turner because the consensus has him as a top 10 player. And that's okay. You're going to have disagreements. I still love Chop. I still would have taken Chop over Dallas Turner. But I also understand that sometimes you're just wrong. And it's okay to be wrong as long as you kind of understand that and learn from it. And the biggest thing with Turner, if you get any form of consistency with these flashes, he could be an incredible football player for you. But my concern is he may never be able to just fully put it all together. But being that he's the second youngest edge rusher, 21 years old, and Brian Flores does a great job with development and helping these players kind of figure it out and piece it together, I'm a lot more confident and bullish on the pick than I was on draft night because I kind of took a step back, looked at what my process was initially and be like, okay, let's reformat what I'm looking at and how I'm looking at it from the specific Vikings point of view. And the movement skills was something I didn't notice as much initially. He can flip his hips like a cornerback and run upfield with running backs in coverage. You don't want your edge rusher doing that. But with the way Brian Flores plays, I think that's incredibly valuable because he loves deception and he loves aggressiveness. And because of those factors, defensive ends and edge rushers do drop into coverage. And if you can run with a running back with his 4.46 40 time, and there were a couple times where I saw him literally chase down running backs in the open field, man, there's a lot of interesting potential with Brian Flores here. And you know what? I have evolved my opinion to be a lot more positive on the pick because of that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price,
Priceline.
Forno on Chop, what did you like specifically more about Chop than Dallas Turner? And has that changed since doing your Dallas Turner deep dive post-draft?
So my opinion on Chop hasn't changed. My opinion on Dallas Turner is in a much more positive light. One of the interesting things when you talk about NFL draft analysts, they have very similar size profiles. Chop Robinson's a little bit bigger, but all people could talk about was how Chop Robinson was small. We didn't have that conversation with Dallas Turner. Why? Brian Windhorst fingers. Why is that? And I find that very interesting because Chop is 6'2 and 6'8, 255 pounds. Dallas Turner, I believe he's 6'2 and 6'8, 247 pounds. So he is a smaller edge rusher, but Chop was the only one that was really dinged for being smaller. And I found that really odd. But the biggest thing with Chop is his get off on the football is better than anybody in this class, and it is special, which is why I said at the draft party, shades of Von Miller, because Von Miller has that type of get off. And if you have that get off, it gives you an advantage that nobody else will have. And it gives you an advantage over every offensive lineman, over every edge rusher that's your contemporary. And then the real question is, can you build off of that? And can you use that to your advantage in the proper way with beating guys around the edge and getting counters involved in your game? Saw flashes of it. And like Dallas Turner, he does need to develop, but he's starting at a more privileged spot, for lack of a better term, because he has that gift. And when you start at a more privileged spot, when you start farther along in the development process, because you have that gift, it gives you a leg up. And I still think Chop might end up the better player, but man, the Turner pick is a lot more exciting for me than it was.
Interesting stuff. Okay, it is time for comments from YouTube. But before we get to that, I want to tell you comments from YouTube is brought to our good friends at Northern Fire Grilling and Barbecue Supply, who did such a good job of sponsoring us at the Fillmore on draft party night, which was so much fun. We're talking about the best barbecue playground in town. I think I'm singing Forno's language here. 70 different gas grills, over 150 dry rubs on the flavor wall. There's also a sauce selection, and that is only a start. Northern Fire is the only Twin Eagle dealer in the Twin Cities carrying luxury grill equipment. There also are unique cuts of meat and seafood. You got to see this place. Their website, northernfirebbq.com. Their location, just north of Highway 62 on Shady Oak Road. If it involves barbecue, Northern Fire Grilling and Barbecue Supply is going to have it. You've got to check it out. It is that time of year. And now, comments from YouTube.
You commented, we read it.
Is this a ransom note?
Now, we're talking about it. It's Purple Access's comments from YouTube.
Roscoe. All right, guys, a few draft-related questions. One, not so much. Let's stick with Dallas Turner. Let's stay in that realm. Joe Martinez, 5738, boys. He says, our corners aren't as bad as people think. Consistent pass rush makes corners look better. And now we're stacked. Turner is a monster. My question to you two, and Judd, I'll start with you. What will Dallas Turner's impact on the passing defense be in 2024? What is best case scenario?
Oh, I mean, best case scenario is he leads rookie edges in sacks. But here's my question off of what Forno said. Because of his ability to drop into coverage, which a lot of ends struggle with, like that's not a natural transition. Forno, how much are we talking about the potential, at least in 2024, of Grenard, Van Ginkle, and Turner being able to be on the field at the same time because of Turner's potential versatility?
I think that it was a likely scenario no matter what edge rusher they picked in this spot, because take a look at their usage last year. Hunter, Wanham, and then when Davenport was on the field, Davenport, when he wasn't, it was Pat Jones, and they utilized those guys consistently together. That three edge rusher package, and especially now when you have the versatility of Turner and Van Ginkle, both those guys can drop into coverage and look comfortable doing it. Alabama had Turner doing it, and Van Ginkle has played inside linebacker before. So it gives you the ability to do a lot of different things, especially with those 3-1-7 looks that the Vikings like to use last year, where they have one linebacker, seven DBs, and three edge rushers. So you can do a lot of different things with these guys. And the commenter's right. When you have a really good pass rush, it helps the cornerback room. And my big thing with cornerbacks is you don't want a weakness. Yeah, it's great to have studs, but just have good football players. If you have three good corners, like the Cincinnati Bengals in 2021, you can go a long way. You just don't want anybody who stinks, who's a liability. Same with offensive line. If you have guys who are capable, consistent, I'd rather have that than have one guy who's like Darrell Revis and then the rest of the guys be like Waswasarongas. Just good, consistent players who have really good mentals and confidence.
That's a great reference. Always is a great reference.
Who's next? Robert Tate trying to play both receiver and cornerback? I mean, come on.
Kenny Wright. He had some games. I'll give him that. Ryan Banas, 7926, says, we have so much cap space next year. The draft is hardly going to matter in the spots we need to fill. Question. Importance of adding draft picks between now and next April's draft. Vikings likely to get a comp pick or two, maybe. Maybe they'll move some players here before the season starts for late round picks. As of right now, just a first and 2/5. What is the importance of adding draft capital for the 2025 NFL draft? Forno, you want to take it first?
I think that they're going to add capital. And look, it's okay to be like, hey, I'm a little bit concerned about this, but it's not a panic mode yet. And there's a lot of time. Let's just be real. The Vikings have four quarterbacks. Nick Mullins could easily be traded in a week before the season. The Vikings got him right before the season. Like, that's a real possibility here because he's on a very inexpensive contract. As far as a pure backup, he's top five or top 10. Like, he's not great, but he'll keep you competitive. And he's got that gunslinger mentality, which is both good and bad. We've seen both sides of it. But if you want to keep the developmental guy Jaren Hall, you're gonna have to get rid of somebody. You're not getting rid of Darnold or McCarthy, and that odd guy out is Mullins. So if somebody needs a backup quarterback, flip him for a sixth or seventh round pick, and they only have to pay him like $1.8 million. That's nothing for a backup quarterback. Like, guys like Jacoby Brissett, Sam Darnold were signing for $8 to $10 million. So you get a good backup quarterback for that price. It's a big win for whoever ends up acquiring him. I think moves like that are going to be how the Vikings acquire draft capital.
Okay, so let's backtrack a little bit too, because I feel this conversation, and look, I'm not saying it's good to have three picks, but I feel like one, we keep ignoring the fact that they're almost certain to get a third round comp pick. But two, I feel like we're acting like this is the same as they don't have a first round pick as well. In my opinion, this discussion is completely different if they've got three picks and no first round pick. But they're starting from a position of a first round pick, which they preserved. Good for them. And then I think from there, what Forno said is bang on. So it's not like they're in a position where they can't get picks. And really, they've got four right now because they're going to get that comp pick. So really, they've got four right now. They've got a first, they've got what, a third, and then 2/5. If you are, and I mean, part of this is the sixth and seventh round, which some people scoff at and some people love. But I think they're going to be just fine. I think they're going to be just fine. And the other thing is, too, I think they have a plan here. Like, if the Vikings were mortgaging draft picks to try to be good this year, and it's like, oh, my God, we got to be good, which at times I felt, and I don't like that. But if you look at what the plan is here, I think there's a plan that exists. So am I saying you don't want to have draft picks consistently? No, that's a bad idea. Am I saying that I look at what they've done and say, you know what? I get it. Absolutely.
Final question, gentlemen, comes from Casey Moore, 8461. Full disclosure, I used his question because I like a word that he used in the phrasing of his comment.
You didn't have to admit that. I'm with you on that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I love good words.
The Vikings draft after the first round was an abomination. Gentlemen. Was the Vikings post first round draft really that bad?
4-0. It's all you.
It's complicated. I don't know where this person is coming from. Well, no, I don't know where this person's coming from. Are they mad that they didn't have second, third, and fifth round picks and they took a kicker with one of their five picks on day three? Because I can understand coming at it from that perspective. Yeah, it's stunk that they didn't have day two picks. Kyrie Jackson's a very intriguing fourth round pick. I think, yeah, he called himself the best value and the best cornerback in this draft. And I just wrote a piece for the Sporting News just before we end up starting recording, talking about Kyrie Jackson, trying to understand what he meant when he said the politics were why he didn't play at Alabama, despite being described by a staffer as the best DB in the room. 83 snaps over 2 years. Well, yeah, he was the lowest ranked recruit in that room as a four-star JUCO, which is lower than like what your average four-star is. And there were 3 5-stars in that room. So I can kind of understand some of that, but he's 25 years old without a 25-year-old football body because he spent 2 years out of the game, and he's got a really intriguing athletic and size profile. So I think that's a big win. He was 62nd on my board, so it was good value too. And I think the other players, it's not sexy. 2 offensive linemen and a defensive tackle from the FCS level who was the Athletics Prospect X. Kaylin Kaler does a series every year where she finds the most interesting draft prospect, writes about them, and then reveals who they are after the draft. And it was Levi Drake Rodriguez. So it's we're going to try and build up the depth of the trenches in this draft. And the kicker thing, if you hate drafting kickers, yeah, I get it. But I don't think it was abomination. I think I gave the Vikings overall grade a B+. I think I would give day three C+. Because I thought they could have done a little bit better and tried to get a little bit more value. But I mean, like, I don't think it's an abomination, but I understand your process if kind of my hypothesis is correct.
And just to humor me before we go to our extra points, this is not a comment from YouTube. This is a comment from Roscoe. Gentlemen, your thoughts. We had a Canadian college football player drafted into the NFL.
I'm glad.
Not a Canadian playing in America, a Canadian playing Canadian college football. We also had the CFL Rookie of the Year drafted in the NFL draft. If I had my Tony Kornheiser Canada flag, I'd be waving it right now. Love me some Canadians in the NFL draft, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Explain this too. How is he? Because ordinarily, you sign the players from that league to future contracts. Explain the draft rule to me.
So it's really interesting. Stiggers, Quantez Stiggers ends up falling in a unique bucket. He did not play American college football. He is 3 years removed from high school. And because of that, he is eligible for the NFL draft because he's never actually been eligible for the draft. So even though he was a rookie of the year in the CFL, he was eligible to enter due to those unique circumstances. A lot of these guys that end up going to the CFL were in an NFL draft, but they weren't taken, or they were taken and they ended up going up north to Canada. So he's got a unique process. And all Canadian college players are eligible for the NFL draft. They just normally don't make it. I think one guy who... if I remember correctly, he was one of the last Canadians to be drafted. Remember Akeem Hicks?
Yep.
Drafted out of Canada.
Yeah.
So, really? And Giovanni Manu is an athletic freak. Yeah. Hey, listen, this is why you have me on, Judd.
Why I asked you. It's a great question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wave the Canadian flag, Judd.
You know what? Well, unfortunately, I don't have one. Greatest anthem, in my opinion, that exists. I love O Canada. It's great. But you know what this is?
Song.
Oh, yeah. It's an absolutely gorgeous song. But you know what this is, Forno? This is Roscoe's attempt in the coming weeks to try to get us to do a CFL preview. Nobody loves the CFL like Ross Brendel does. And you know, I'm not joking. He's been to Winnipeg.
I'll need to sit down with Phil and pitch Bombers Daily, Blue Daily, whatever we want to call it, so we can do that. With my shout out to my buddy Taylor Allen, who covers the Blue Bombers for the Winnipeg Free Press.
See, I told you guy loves the CFL.
Listen, I'm a Calgary Stampeders guy. Give me some Bo Levi Mitchell. I mean, I know,
you know what?
He's kind of at the end of his career, but man,
Bo Levi Mitchell trying to come here? Do you remember that story?
Oh, yeah, I remember
he worked
story.
Out here. And yep. Cousins, and he said, I want to beat out Kirk Cousins. And they immediately said, you're going back to Calgary because we don't want someone here. And then the Falcons are like, hey, let's draft Michael Penix.
Incredible.
Here's my thing. I think Forno, Manny, and Ross should go to a Stampeders Blue Bombers game in Winnipeg, and Forno can just crush Molson's and Labatt's.
And let's not forget, boys, your Minnesota Myth open up this Sunday at Target Center. I almost said Target Field at Target Center. Let's close with extra points, gentlemen.
These extra points never miss. It's Purple Access's extra points.
I say we start with Forno, unless
go ahead,
you've got
Forno.
A great one. Forno, your extra point.
I got one. But first, Phil Mackey, I know you'll end up watching this at some point. I need you to expect that trip for all of us. Please and thank you. I'll get some good stuff for you.
Oh, the Hubbard family will be happy to point take is, care of
your trip. Blue Bombers have a nice little stadium. I'm just throwing that out there.
Bud Grant statue.
Yeah.
Which we don't have here.
Absolutely.
Which is a travesty. How do we not have a Grant statue in front of US Bank Stadium? Sorry.
Sad.
Sorry. It's wild. I want to talk about draft pick trades. And if you want, I wrote a piece for Arif Hasan-Stubsack, wide left, talking about Kwesi Dofomensa's draft day trades. But he traded a third and a fourth round pick in next year's draft to go get a top 10 consensus player, ninth overall in Dallas Turner. Well, why are we hearing criticism of the Detroit Lions trading third and fourth round picks from 2025 as well for two fourth round picks? The aforementioned tackle from British Columbia, Giovanni Manu, and a safety from Utah, Sione Vaki, who they're moving to running back. Why aren't we hearing criticism about those trades? But all we're hearing about is how the Vikings gave up these big assets, but they got a top 10 consensus player. To me, it's kind of absurd, and it just speaks the volumes of whenever you have somebody in an industry that is trying to change the game, which Kwesi is, because he's a stock market guy, an analytics guy, and he's not a traditional football guy. I think he's getting unfair criticism. Brad Holmes said in a press conference that he basically doesn't pay attention to positional value. Dude, there's studies that say positional value is a real thing, and you just blow it off in a public press conference. Like, look, I get it. You're Detroit, and Detroit is a different type of city than a lot of other cities out here, especially considering they're in the Midwest. But if you're going to criticize the Vikings for giving up that draft capital, I better hear you criticizing the Lions for doing the same thing for objectively worse players.
Bravo, dude.
Fired up.
I saw your
tweet
about that, but I love the elaboration. That's fantastic, and it's a great point. It's a fantastic point.
Fired up, Forno. Why don't I go, Judd, and you can take us home. You ready for this? Mine's super quick, off topic. The Minnesota Golden Gophers are officially in North Carolina championship season. About 4 months away, right before they take on North Carolina at the Huntington Bank Stadium. Your Minnesota Golden Gophers, they will head to Michigan to take on the defending national champs with a record of 3-1 after losing the opener to North Carolina, but beating mighty Rhode Island, beating mighty Nevada, and beating the hated Iowa Hawkeyes for a second year in a row.
Wow.
And also, I want to give credit to my Iowa Hawkeyes loving friends. They are 100% correct, Judd. It was not a fair catch. They are correct in that assessment. You know what it was, though, Judd? It was an invalid fair catch signal. Thus, every time they complain, Judd, about it not being a fair catch, they're correct. Shut up. Let it go. Both teams weren't good last year.
That's what
nobody,
No one cares.
No one cares.
You're literally fighting about something that everyone's mocking you for. Just let it. Those teams sucked. The Big Ten West sucked. It was an embarrassment. Yeah. Forget about it. It's like that game decided a real championship.
No, and it cost you nothing. It cost them nothing other than the pick.
I was there. Mm-hmm. Gorgeous day. Lots of beer. It was a fantastic day. I don't care if the dude took off his pants at the 50. I don't give a crap. It was a great day to watch football. Look, here's the thing I've decided, and you can agree or disagree. In my old age, I've decided that Gopher football is the experience. It is the Saints as an independent league team when I used to go park at Midway Stadium in the parking lot and never go in the game because I was sucking down beers left and right. No one cared about the Saints game. Like the Saints sold out, no one cared. It was the circus sideshow and the drinking. Gopher football is the same thing.
I want
just get over anywhere. You know, I don't care if everyone transfers. You could put third graders out there. I wouldn't know because I'm just there for the experience.
I'm with you, Judd. I want the team to win. At the end of the day, I want them to win every game. But my weekend is not going to be ruined by them losing because I know pretty much you go into every season. You can pretty much circle the games that they're going to lose, the games that they're going to win, and there's a few toss-ups. Unfortunately, this is probably never going to be a national championship contending football.
And I'm fine with that now. Yes.
Sorry, Tyler.
Fun fact about North Carolina. Do you know who their quarterback is going to be next year?
I saw this on Twitter and I ignored it. Who is it going to be?
His name is Max Johnson. He's the son of Brad.
Yes.
So nice.
Yes.
Oh, yep. LSU.
Coming back.
Southpaw, right?
Yep.
LSU then Texas A&M last year. And now he's at North Carolina.
He's a Southpaw, right?
He's just like his dad. He's not exciting. Yeah, he's a Southpaw. Not exciting, not flashy. He's just a pro.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not so sure the Gophers are going to lose that game. All right. Here's my extra point is this. If you would indulge me in geeking out. Now, I think Forno is going to totally get this, okay? But we got a note today from the public relations department of the National Football League that said coming very soon, my guess is a week from 2 days, so next Thursday, we're going to get the schedule release. I don't think I get this irrationally excited about something where I know all the opponents, so it's not like, oh my God, you're playing a team and you didn't expect to. Yet the actual setting of the Viking schedule to me and the entire league is one of my, I would argue that of all the offseason stuff in this league, it might be my most just exciting thrill of putting it all together and seeing the puzzle and seeing, because the opponents and how they stack up very much can sway me on how I feel about a season, who you start against, who you play in the middle, where your bye week is. So I would just like to fully disclose to my friends here, my support group here, what a complete geek I am. Because I love the schedule release, which is now a primetime event. I think it's fantastic, and I can't wait to see how the schedule primetime games, how it all shakes out.
When the NFL goes to 18 games, Judd, they should make that 18th game, you know, so you know 17 of the opponents, right? What if the 18th game was literally just to spin the wheel and that's your opponent? Or some type of lottery system, add a little bit more intrigue to the schedule release. I would like that.
Do you like that, Forno?
Send him to Vegas and do a roulette.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe a little craps action, throw the dice a bit.
It sounds stupid at first, and then I think about it, and I'm like, how much would ESPN pay for that?
Oh, ungodly amounts.
Yeah.
Look at how much Amazon and NBC have paid for a streaming playoff game. It's like $100-150 million.
I know. It's ridiculous, but I think Ross goes on to something here.
Add to the intrigue, the NFL. It's one thing they
because
do
the thing now is all we're looking like a primetime event is the unveiling of just dates and times. So you're right. Like if you had game 18, you don't know.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Or what if everybody played week 10? And it was a mystery opponent, but obviously you found it out at the beginning of the year. But it would be, I think it would be hilarious. What if it could even be anybody? What if the Vikings drew the Packers 3 times?
Oh, wow. And 18 games will be 2 byes, and then the Super Bowl will be played on President's Day weekend, correct?
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's what I've seen.
That's what's been floated.
Yeah. So it becomes a holiday.
For what they should do is take back over Labor Day weekend. Mike Florio, I think, threw it out the other day.
You know why they don't?
College football.
Well, that and they did it years ago, and the ratings were off. So they freaked out.
Oh.
They freaked out. The Vikings actually opened on Labor Day weekend in the 90s at some point. Like, I think they opened against the Bears. It was like 93, or it was a long, long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the ratings were down. And they're like, oh, we're done with that then.
Yeah, they stopped doing it, I think, after the 2000 or 2001 season, where they stopped doing it completely. But look, it's the NFL. You're drawing, you're going to draw millions of people to watch the schedule release. So you could probably go back to Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, yeah. I think at some point in time, I don't know the year, you guys, but I think at some point in time, this league went from being really successful, like it was loved, to being totally ingrained. And it wasn't the 90s, right? Like the 90s was really popular, but Forno, I'm with you. I think it's come to a point now where you could play games at midnight on July 4th and people are going to watch now.
Yeah. Think about all the crappy Thursday night games we watch, and everybody rolls out of bed 3-4 times a year to watch a game overseas at 8 a.m. They'd be just fine with that.
Exactly right. Exactly right. All right, boys. Great stuff. Again, find my guy Forno's work at the Sporting News. He is, and I'm not joking about this, he writes constantly. So there is a plethora of Vikings and National Football League information. And also check him out on his YouTube channel, Vikings First and Skull. That is great stuff as well. We appreciate your time as always, Tyler. Ross, great job. Fantastic. Go Blue Bombers.
For the W, baby.
Keep
for
your shirt on. The weather's nice, but I do not want to see your shirt off. I'm Judd. We'll see you later.